On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Brennan Michelson of the Seattle Mariners organization. Brennan, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
So, yeah, like you said, my name's Brennan. I'm the highest strength coach for the Seattle Mariners. I'm starting my fourth season in professional baseball, and all of them have been with the Mariners organization. What I've done kind of with the org, my responsibilities have kind of been working on some of our conditioning and bioenergetics for in-season pitchers and their conditioning, and also help kind of develop their and implement our pre-start plyometric routine that we do with our starting pitchers.
What was your journey up to the Mariners prior to pro ball?
Yeah, I have an interesting one. In high school, I was kind of the weight room warrior. Like, loved the weight room. Wasn't super athletic as a lot of my high school teammates can attest, but I just love playing sports. So I really kind of found my niche in the weight room. I played football, I sat on the bench for basketball, and I ran track. But I just really fell in love with the weight room, and that kind of subconsciously, I think, kind of steered me toward the SNC path. Out of high school, I joined the Marine Force Reserves and started college in 2013 after I graduated in 2012.
And then how about after anything in between college to pro ball, or you went right to pro ball?
So, yeah, I graduated. I guess I really started my journey as a strength and conditioning coach at Washington State University, where I graduated from in 2017. And I got an undergrad or a minor in strength and conditioning. So that kind of gave me the platform to reach out to baseball teams to get an internship that summer. And I reached out to the Mariners, and Rob Fumagalli gave me the opportunity to be the intern in AZL in 2017. And then after that experience, I was accepted to get my master's at the University of Montana, where I was an intern and a graduate TA for the next couple of years. And then that spring of 2019, when I was getting ready to defend my thesis, Rob reached back out to me and offered me the short season position with the Mariners. And I just jumped at the chance and was so grateful that he was able to reach back out to me and trusted me to not even be there for spring training and kind of just jump right in feet first that 2019 season.
Yeah, that's awesome. We have like an intern feeder program at our place as well. And a lot of those guys will either become seasonal or, you know, some of them have even become full-time for us. So it's cool that, like, you know, the system, you know, the kind of ins and outs, the intricacies of pro ball. And then we have you, like, you know, on our contact list, like, hey, are you in? And you're like, yeah, totally. Like, yeah. Bring me in.
It's just, we have a really similar thing with the Mariners too. Like, I think the last like two or three interns that they've had have gotten a full-time position with them. So it's if you get that opportunity to intern, like, intern is kind of like not like the most glamorous job, but it can really pay dividends, especially like in pro ball, because you get all that experience working with the AZL or the Florida Gulf Coast League, you know.
Yeah, 100%. Our students, like, we and that's the thing, like, in pro ball it's all hands on deck. So like, you may be a student or an intern or whatever, but like you said, the insight, the value that you get out of that is so much, because you're just full go. Like, our guys do screens, run warm ups, mm-hmm. or in the weight room. Like, it's all day. It's not just a cleaning thing. It's not like right. a book learning, and it's like full on, you know, in the fire. And then if you can handle that, like, you can handle the pro ball life. So,
yeah, exactly.
So talk to me about your best professional baseball story that you have so far, either something that makes you laugh or something that makes you proud. Just what's the best one that sticks out in your mind so far?
I mean, pro baseball is just like such a funny thing. Like, once you're in it, you just kind of like start to look around. You're like, wow, this is professional baseball, huh? And that's kind of like what this story is to me. Last year, we were down in Portland for our first series of the year, minor leagues had a lot of different nutrition changes. Away teams had to provide nutrition and pregame meals, pregame set snacks, that kind of stuff. And we show up there the day before the game. So it's like a Monday, I think, and get into the locker room, look around, like, I don't really see any snacks or anything there. No worries. I'm just going to text the clubby. Like, I shoot him a text like, hey, man, new rules. Like, probably didn't realize it, but we need some snacks and stuff for pregame. And he's texted back. No worries. I got you. All right, cool. So get there Tuesday morning, get lifting and all that kind of stuff. Got that going. And I go into the locker room again, and there's still no snacks. And I text him like, hey, man, like, no snacks still. Like, he's, don't worry. Running behind on the delivery. It's coming. Like, all right, cool. So guys start showing up around like 1 or 2. And I have to start, you know, getting all the conditioning, pitcher stretch, post bullpen lift, like all that stuff. So I'm out of the locker room for like 2 or 3 hours before the game. I go in there at like 5:30, game's at 7. And I look at my skipper, and he's just like, we just make eye contact, and he just starts a beeline up towards the concession stand. He's like, our guys need to eat. And I was like, oh, Skip, you're right, man. You're right. So he goes up and orders 40 hot dogs from the concession stand. And I just like tail between my legs, walk up the stairs and swipe the team card for the pregame meal with hot dogs and ketchup and mustard. And I'm just like, man, how am I going to tell my boss that the first series of the year, new nutrition and everything, like, I just had to spend $400 on hot dogs for the team for the pregame meal. And not to mention, like, I didn't budget that for the week on the team card. So it was a tough, rough start, but we got dialed in after that, which was good. But that's just that classic pro ball minor league story right there.
I'm laughing on the inside because it is a classic pro ball story. Okay, so I have two questions off of that. One, where were the snacks? And two, what did your boss say when you told him about the hot dogs?
So there were like snacks, like peanut butter pretzels and like things like that, but there was no like meat and cheese. Like, guys couldn't make sandwiches. I think we had like one jar of peanut butter that was probably already gone when I got in there. So it was like one of those things where it's like, we don't have nearly enough for what these guys need. And that was kind of the I'm gonna be polite and say that I just asked the clubby really, really nicely to that we need snacks next time. Like, I know we have COVID protocols and all this stuff this year, but like, I don't budget for pregame meals because you guys were supposed to provide for pregame meals. So we got it situated the next day. But my boss, he just kind of like just looked at, like, I gave him a call and he's just like, I could just tell he was like, looked around. I was like, just shook his head. He's like, just don't let it happen again. I was like, Aaron, you got it, man. Like, I'll definitely make sure that we do not have, you can, I give you my word that we won't have pregame hot dogs ever again.
Oh, that, again, anybody that's listening that's been in the minor leagues, like, is has to be smiling a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, we've all been through that. Mine, a hot dog story for me, I'm telling you, everybody has one, right?
So, oh, yeah.
I'm in AAA in Pawtucket, and they have, it's called, like, Hot Wiener Night or something. And we had, like, hot dog themed jerseys and everything. And it was, like, I don't know, 25-cent hot dogs or something.
Right.
And I came in, and there was a tray of, like, 200 hot dogs or something, and they're like, dude, look at this, isn't this great? And I'm like, why? And they're like, it's the special for the night, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So then they put them in the fridge, and then the next day guys were like warming them up, eating them. So like, it's like hot dogs, you know, it's bad enough the day of, and then the
right.
next day they're still, and I was like, guys, we have, and the thing is, we had food, we had
right.
and it's like, ah, dude, you can't beat a good ballpark hot dog. I'm like, I mean, yes, but the next day, like, that's so tough. So
reheated hot dog from the ballpark, like,
oh,
I get it,
man.
At the ballpark that night of, like, okay, maybe, but then the next day it's like you go to the game and you bring home a hot dog and you like put it in the fridge.
Oh,
like,
man.
No one does that.
Oh, it's, but everybody has a minor league story like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, I appreciate you sharing that one. Okay, so you started off rough, right? And then you end up becoming strength coach of the year. Is that this year, same year, or is that?
Yeah, okay. That was last year.
Okay. So talk to me about being the strength coach of the year. First and foremost, I've had many strength coaches on here that have won. Congrats. It is peer voted. So obviously you're doing things at a high level. So talk to me about what made you successful this year that ended up in you winning the award.
Yeah, I mean, starting off from hot dogs, it's like started from the bottom, now we're here, right? Like with hot dogs and then went into Scotty. No, I mean, I think the thing that kind of made me successful this year and is just being adaptable. And I think my favorite quote that I've kind of based my coaching career around, it's like, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. So essentially, like, if you don't plan at all, like, that's worthless. Like, you have nothing to show for what you're doing. But once you plan and things don't start going to that plan, like, you have the knowledge base of, okay, here's what I was planning on doing. Here's how I can kind of redirect and make some changes to the daily plan. And I think as a minor league strength coach, like that's everything. Like being able to adjust to your athlete's needs and what the situation comes up as. And that's something I feel like I did a really good job last year, and I want to continue to work on that throughout the years. So I think that's a huge part of being a strength conditioning coach.
Yeah, the minor league strength coach wears so many hats, and it's been brought up a number of times on this podcast, but it can't be said enough. Like, the nutrition is on our plate, the sports science is on our plate, even to an extent the mental skills is on our plate, plus all of the strength and conditioning duties, plus setting up the road gyms and working on the schedule with the manager and working with guys in the cage and on the mound. And just, there's just so many hats that you have to wear. So I would agree 100%, like the adaptability piece is just enormous, and having some sort of plan and then knowing that plan's probably not going to work the right way, and then having a plan off of that plan and then a plan off of that plan, right? Like, that's exactly kind of how we find success. So I agree 100%. What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful, just in general, maybe besides that adaptability piece? Are there other things that help bring success?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, the wearing so many different hats, like just kind of tailing off of that, like you have to be able to communicate super, super well with everyone on staff, because you're the one who's like, you're in contact with everyone on the team. And that's from athletic training. Like, you and your athletic trainer are probably you probably have the closest relationship on staff. You're always constantly communicating with them. Like, hey, this guy was complaining about his hamstring in the weight room today, so we made some modifications. Let me know if he comes in to talk to you today. And if he doesn't, like, let's go find him and get him some treatment, you know, that kind of stuff. Or like with the hitting coach, we do some movement prep type things. And you can see these things that they do before they go to the cage or before they even lift. Like, you see, like, hey, his hip dissociation is a little off. Like, we see it in our movement screen, and we're kind of seeing it with his med ball work too. Like, maybe that's something that you can attack as a group, S&C and in hitting and things like that. So just being able to communicate with coaches and with your athletic trainer is huge. And same thing with the players. One thing I found is, like, trying to be a control freak in the weight room and trying to be like a college football strength conditioning coach is really challenging, just because these guys are professional athletes. There are things that they are going to do in the weight room. There's things they're not going to do in the weight room, and forcing them to do things that they don't want to do. Like, you're just going to start building this barrier in between your guys. So one thing I try to do is give them, like, redirect them to things that are going to help them, while also, like, hey, you don't want to back squat today. Like, that's fine. That's no big deal. We can do some goblet squat, and let's mix in some box jumps and things like that to try to get that stimulus, but also, like, not forcing them to do things that they probably aren't ready to do if they're not feeling like they're ready to do it. And the weight room's fun too. So trying to let them have fun, get some arm farm in every once in a while, like sometimes giving them the opportunity to take some shirtless selfies in the mirror. Like, when you got good lighting in there, like, let it ride, you know?
The mirrors in minor league clubhouses, I will say there are a lot of things not great in the minor leagues, but you can always find a good mirror. And you know which guys are going to be in front of it too. 100%.
Absolutely.
100%. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Yeah, I saw this question and I just, like, ooh, man, there's a lot of things that I personally, like, have believe that a lot of people like are kind of like, well, that's kind of funky. But my favorite one, I think, is adequate is greater than outstanding. And like trying to strive for this outstanding movement screen, threes on everything. We're trying to strive for outstanding force plate scores. We're trying to strive for outstanding trap bar jumps. Where as long as they're adequate at those things, at those metrics, I think that is kind of what we're trying to shoot for as strength conditioning coaches. Because if someone's trap bar deadlift, if we have them doing trap bar jumps and their force output is their velocity is a little bit lower than what it was the last couple of weeks, but they're performing on the field, their exit velo is up, their time to first base is up. It's like, well, I'm not going to try to fix that. Like, that's just a trap bar jump. Like, why is that the thing? I'm more focused on what's going on in the field. Are the numbers on the field matching up to what we want to see, you know? And I think the same thing goes for in the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, we have this guy who's jumping out of the gym. His body comp is fantastic, but he's lost 3 miles an hour on his fastball. Like, is that like what we're striving for? Is like these metrics that we collect as a strength conditioning staff? Not really. We're trying to make them be better baseball players. And if that's happening and we're making that effective, like that's where I kind of think that adequate, they check the box, like, great. All right. Now we can move on to something that's going to help make them better on the field.
I would agree with you. And I think that's not the, it's not like the sexy answer, you know, for strength right. coaches, because we always want to strive to be a little better and jump a little higher and lift a little bit more and run a little faster. But ultimately, like, none of those things show up on the back of their baseball card, right? Like, nobody's trap bar deadlift is on the back of a baseball card. Nobody's right. bench press, squat. It's like your batting average, your home runs, your RBIs, all of that is on the back of the card. And like, ultimately that's what matters. And again, like, there's the, you know, the whole thing of like, what are actual KPIs? Like, can you even measure, like, is there any sort of thing? And like, it, you can't say no, because then right. nobody would ever want to use the weight room, but you can't always, you know, there's just that weird area. But I would agree. The thing is, like, if you're, I think a lot of guys that perform really well on the field are actually probably in that adequate category that you're talking about, yeah. right? Like, they're good enough at weight room stuff that they can get by and they use it to their advantage, but it's not like a means to an end where they're outstanding. Like, the elite weight room guys are rarely like your right. best guys on the field. Now, I would say, like, consistently coming to the weight room and taking care of your movement prep, your soft tissue, your, you know, your strength training, those guys tend to do really well on the field from what I've seen, because they're consistent with the routine, but usually they're consistent with everything, right? Where the guys that are just like, I'm going to come in and be an absolute freak in the weight room, there are exceptions, of course,
yep.
but I would agree, like, for the most part, like, most of the guys, especially the higher up you go, I think you'll see, like, a lot of the older guys, it's just kind of come in, get their body ready to play and go out, versus like, I had this conversation with a guy this year and he's like, I don't need to put 50 pounds on my deadlift. Like, I already throw 96, 97 with a great slider. Like, I need to get people out, like, help me with that. And that's kind yeah. of like, as you go up, that's kind of the different set of mind, like the different mind frame. Like, some of the guys in the lower levels, like with that development aspect, like, you know, if they're going to succeed at the higher levels, they might need to put some weight on or some strength on. Mm-hmm. So like, in the short term, they might not perform as well, knowing that in the long term, it's going to be worthwhile for them. But yeah, the higher you go, it doesn't really matter the numbers in the weight room. That's probably crazy for us to say, but
right.
I mean, it's, and again, strength coach is going to be mad, because sometimes we just want to justify our job and be like, look at this guy put 50 pounds on his squat. It's like, yeah, but he sucks on the field now.
Right.
It's such a skill oriented game that even like body composition changes, like, hey, you know, you got to lose 10 pounds or you got to put on 10 pounds of muscle. Like, that takes a totally different toll on the skill acquisition part of the game. And you can throw a guy out of whack big time. The game is like, you got super small guys, super big guys. You got guys that weigh 180 pounds throwing 95. You got guys weighing 275 throwing, like, there's so many body types and frames in the game that I think for the majority of people, like you said, that adequate is probably better than being outstanding in the weight room just for the sake of being outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. I think that you hit it on the head with that. Like, just just trying to get, like, obviously we know the guys who can benefit from like getting stronger. Like, we see it, we know who they are. Like, but the guys who are like good enough, check the box, like the more time they spend doing things in the weight room, trying to add 10 pounds in season, like that's just extra stress that they don't need. And it's probably just weighing them down when they're trying to perform at their best every day, which is the other thing that I see a lot of. Like, I think programming for baseball is the hardest in any sport, just because it's always, they're playing a game almost every day, 162 games. Like, there's no other sport that you have that, especially when you're trying to perform at your best for 162 games. Like, it is just like, you got to get into a routine. You got to make sure your body feels good. Like, as much as you hate to say it, like it's hang on. Like, you had a fantastic off season, all these games that you made, like, all right, let's just hold on to that as for as long as we can throughout the course of the season. And if you make it to the playoffs, even more so, you know?
Yeah. I think the older you get, like your adaptability resources become more and more limited. So it's like, you have to almost choose, like, do I really want to put the effort in to put an extra 10 to 20 pounds on my squat? Or do I want to use that focus, that energy, that those resources towards improving my swing? Right. And then it's like, okay, I'm okay with where my squat is at right now. I need to improve my swing. I need to improve my throwing mechanics. I need to do this. Like, there's only so much you can do, especially the older you get. When you're young, like, you can roll out of bed and just do whatever you want pretty much. But right. It's like, the older you get, the higher level. And then, like you said, we play every day. And it's just, the big league games are longer, the days are long. And that's the other thing too, is like, most of the time you have practice every day, right? Like, so you have to factor that into your program design as well. And just the big picture, because the thing is, I don't know if this is the misconception or not, but the guys at the big league level are really good, but they all want to get better. None of them are like, I'm in the big leagues, I'm fine. It's like, no, I'm in the big leagues and I want to stay in the big leagues. Like, I'm going to work really hard. And a lot of those guys, like, it may seem like eyewash some of the stuff they do, but they're so committed to their craft that, like, they just want to get better. So, like, you have to factor that in too, where, like, the guy's going to do his routine in the cage every single day. Even if it's a 1 o'clock game, he's going to show up extra early so he can get his routine in the cage. And it's like, you have to factor all of that in as well. So it's almost like, that, like you said, the weight room stuff almost becomes like, hey, just get ready for your practice and your game. And then when we have time to push it a little, maybe we have an off day coming up, like, we can work that through. So I'm there with you. And it's something that I think people listening that aren't in this setting will never understand. And there's those are cop outs. Like, but like, it's really hard to pick your spots, and you have to know the schedule ahead of time. And then, as we said earlier, you have this great plan in place, and then it gets rained out, and then you have a double header, and it's like, well, there goes my whole plan for these guys, right?
Sweet show and go tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, well, that's my whole plan to have a routine for these guys. I want to circle back to something you said really early on when you were introducing yourself about organizing, like, conditioning and bioenergetic stuff for your pitchers. I don't have that on my notes of stuff to talk about, so if I'm catching you off guard or there's something you can't say, like, I completely understand, but just kind of talk about like, what your role is with that, and kind of what the goals are you're looking for, and things like that.
Yes. So we had the same conditioning kind of template that we use from AAA all the way down to the AZL when I was there in 2017 as an intern. And then when I came back in 2019, same thing. It was really good. Like, you hit all the different energy systems, like, and you kind of ride the energy system curve all the way up to the PCR, like, right before their start. So it's really cool. And I find that stuff super fascinating. But in 2020, after everything kind of got canceled, that was kind of my goal to revamp our conditioning that we do. And I followed the same type of template, but I wanted to give our coaches kind of this buffer for volumes for what they do. So basically I created like a Excel sheet that we have a high day and then we have a low day, and you can kind of bounce back and forth between those two bars essentially And you can kind of play it by ear with, oh, we had a late bus ride yesterday. Like, let's go on the low end of the intensity spectrum for these guys today, just so they're not, you know, dragging during their conditioning and stuff. So you can kind of play with the volume, play with the intensities that way. And it kind of gives a lot of autonomy for the strength coaches that we have on staff to adjust the way they see fit, which I think is super important. Like we said, trying to be able to be adaptable and having a plan that is adaptable is really helpful for that.
So are you doing relievers too, or just starters? You're doing
all of it? So I do it a little bit. So one's a starter template, one's a reliever template. We had a 6-man rotation this last year. So basically, if I were to take you through a starter's day or a starter's week, they start on Monday, and then after that, they go into a mobility type circuit that they kind of get that restoration, and then they go into more of an extensive endurance, and then they go into more intensive. So it's a little bit more intense, more intensity, shorter duration, and they go into anaerobic capacity, and then they go into their neuromuscular power before the off day and before they start on that next Monday. So you're kind of touching just all those different energy systems, which is super important for baseball, even though it's a neuromuscular power sport. It's a PCR sport. Like, having that aerobic base is super important for keeping athletes healthy, and being able to touch that every once in a while in season or once a week is really helpful for guys. And a lot of guys, when they fall on that neuromuscular power spectrum, like, they need more aerobic conditioning just to kind of help with their recovery and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing that too, is like, young kids nowadays, it's so much emphasis on swing mechanics or throwing harder and putting all of their training towards like those max outputs. But the reality is, like, the game itself is 3 or 4 hours long of just being on your feet and like running back and forth to the dugout, and then you do it again the next day. This is more position players, but even pitchers, like relievers go out, and the thing is, like, a lot of people don't realize is most of those guys go out with like an elevated heart rate to begin with, either caffeinated or just the adrenaline is pumping. And then if you're a late innings reliever, like, you're probably not going to sleep right away because you're not pitching until, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, the adrenaline's pumping, whatever. So you fall asleep 3 o'clock in the morning, you got 10 o'clock gym bus the next day. So like, you didn't sleep as well. So I think getting that, the aerobic work in for guys, it's counterintuitive in a lot of baseball circles, but for me, I think it's really relevant, really important, just helping with recovery. And especially as you go on in the season, like, a lot of the work you do in April and May is going to help you last through the end of the season. Like, if you're tired at the beginning and you're banging stuff early, like, you got no chance by the end, because you're only going to accumulate more fatigue and more stress. Especially at the big league level, when you're playing 162 plus the playoffs plus spring training, like, it all really adds up, all the travel and everything. So I know it's not like super popular in circles, and people like, oh, you know, power sport guys, but like, they really do need some sort of like aerobic output work just to last and to be able to recover. Are you doing, so obviously you're hitting on all these ends of the spectrum. Are you specifically running guys, or are you finding other ways to do that, like aerobic circuit types and bike types and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, really the one that the extensive endurance one is the one that is like, whatever the guy feels most comfortable doing. Like, we have some Latin players who like really like doing poles. I'm like, I'm never going to tell a guy to go run poles, but if someone's like, hey, can I go run poles? Like, yeah, man, make sure you do the calculation real quick. Like, all right, you have 1,000 yards today. Like, all right, 6 poles, then 6 down and backs, and then call it good. You know, other guys, like, we have guys who hate running. All right, go jump on the bike for 20 minutes. If you have your heart rate monitor with you, like, throw that on and make sure that you're in this 110 to 130 zone, like that zone 2 kind of thing. So you can kind of program it that way, which I think is super helpful for guys, just because you give them the opportunity to kind of be their own boss in their conditioning and that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think giving a little bit of autonomy of like, hey, this is the adaptation, this is the output I'm looking for, like pick your poison on which one you want. Like, I think personally gives you a little bit more bang for your buck. And like, there is definitely benefit to running and like being able to repeatedly hit on the ground and tolerate that as well. But again, it's such a long season that like getting off your feet, but still getting your heart rate to where you want it to be, still getting that sweat going or the output going or whatever it is you're looking for. Like, I really do think there is value to that and just being able to pick, like for me, hey, and it could even be like day to day for guys like, I do feel like going for a run today. Like, really? Okay, go ahead. Like, nah, today I'm going to hit the elliptical. I'm going to hit the bike. Like, yeah. But again, I think those opportunities are like, we still need to hit those in season with guys. And again, it's probably not a super popular opinion and that can probably fall under the craziness question, but I am there. I really do believe that just being able to last that full season, like you have to be able to have some sort of recovery base. And again, it doesn't always have to be running. It can be on the bike. It can be, you know, aerobic circuits, mobility circuits, other things like that. But just working in that kind of zone, I think really does have some value, especially with how the game has transitioned in off seasons and private settings to like be only power based, be only max strength based. And like, we're just missing a lot of that as like young general development.
Definitely. I think John Wagle, who's with the Royals, was on Zach Dakin's baseball performance summit, and he had just a fantastic presentation kind of on this topic. So if you guys have that access to that, like I would 100% recommend it. It's fantastic. And I think he does a really good job kind of breaking it down and making it digestible for people who aren't nerds like me, who like find this stuff just super, super interesting. But I mean, yeah, I think, like you said, being able to touch each end of the spectrum, have the capacity to be aerobically fit while also being neuromuscularly powerful is super important for our athlete base in baseball and keeping them healthy. Like being aerobically fit isn't going to be a bad thing, but if it's making you less powerful, sure, yeah, that makes sense. But if you have the choice between being really powerful and really aerobically fit, like probably take both those.
Yeah, and the other funny thing is like in the game, there are plenty of guys who want to do that weirdly, especially starters. Like you said, Latin guys, it's part of their culture, like to go out and just run poles. And like some of the best starters, you know, that I've been around and that I have heard, like, will go out and run distance, or they'll sweat on the elliptical for 30 minutes, or they'll be on the bike. And like, it's so weird to like, I see people who are like off season or like even lower level, whatever, you know, like just chirping about like, we don't do any of this like long distance stuff, but like the best in the game, like do it. And I, again, maybe that's not for the better, maybe it is, but like, there's something to like longevity in this game and like studying the people that have done it for a long time, right? Like we had, I think 4 guys this year hit their 10-year mark in big league service. Like those are guys I want to learn from, you know, because they've been around a long time. Like, dude, what are you doing to keep yourself relevant, healthy, and like good enough to stick around this long? So like there's something to be said about those, the people that have been around a long time, whether they're strength coaches or not. Like players themselves, you can learn a ton from if you're just willing to be open-minded.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that adequate versus outstanding. Like, is their aerobic base adequate? Like, great. Now we don't have to really focus on that. That's not our focus anymore. Like, we can just maintain that throughout the season, right?
100%. Like, we're not creating marathon runners. We're just creating adequacy, which I'm there with you. So what advice do you have for others in the field? Maybe young coaches looking to get into pro ball or just older coaches that have been around a while. Just any advice that you have for us.
So this kind of goes to the books that I'm going to list for you in the next question. But being a jack of all trades and a master of none is huge. Like the wider your knowledge breadth for especially this field, like you said, like we have so many different hats that we wear, the more of a resource you can be for your organization. But with that being said, like if you find something that is super interesting to you and you want to go down a rabbit hole and you want to try to like be kind of the go-to guy on staff, like do that. Don't just limit yourself to like, I need to be an expert in everything. Like be good at everything, and then you can find the one thing that you want to be really, really, really good at, you know?
Yeah, I really like that. And I think in general, just like versatility is so important. And like as a young strength coach, it's like you want to coach anybody, right? Like I was in grad school, we literally like the three GAs, we all just hung around all day and just coached with each other's teams, like to get reps. Like my primary teams were baseball, women's soccer, softball, but I was with, you know, women's lacrosse and swimming and diving and volleyball, because it's just creating that coaching environment for yourself and working with different teams and working with different populations. And then once you understand that and you have a good grasp of a lot of different things, then you can kind of like pick and choose your specialty. Oh, I really like nutrition, or I really like program design, I really like speed development. And then that's where you bring value. I think one of the things that our staff with the Red Sox does really well is like we have a lot of really smart people who have really good bases of understanding of knowledge. And then each person kind of has their own specialty that they like, right? Like I really enjoy program design. We have a guy who's really down the speed rabbit hole, like a nutrition guy, a sports science guy. And those are kind of their niches, and they make our group as a whole better. But we all have that base understanding. I don't think you can dive into a niche, put all your eggs in that basket, and then if it doesn't work out, you don't have anything to fall back on, right?
Right.
So like I agree 100% with you. And especially in today's game, like versatility is so like appreciated for players, just being able to play different positions and do different things. And I think staff-wise, it's the same with how much the lines are blurring between like sport coaches and sports science and strength coaches. Like it would behoove you to learn the game of baseball if you're going to be a baseball strength coach.
Right. Definitely.
Okay. So let's go into that. You mentioned the next question here. So let's dive in on continuing ed resources, books you'd recommend, seminars you attend, podcasts you listen to, just where are you going to stay on top of things?
So I'm kind of obviously love looking at like strength conditioning, like program design books, things like that. But I'm kind of more of like, how can these books by authors that I really like, and they have really incredible like information in them. One of them is Endure by Alex Hutchinson. It's my favorite book I've ever read. It's fantastic. It's a deep dive into really just that topic of endurance, and he talks about like Ernest Shackleton and like the Nike Breaking 2 marathon. And as a bioenergetics guy, like a nerd, I guess, I just find that stuff super fascinating. So Endure by Alex Hutchinson, Range by David Epstein, which is kind of the jack of all trades, master of none kind of book. He starts out the book just by talking about Roger Federer versus Tiger Woods. So Roger Federer played a plethora of different sports leading up to him basically choosing tennis. And Tiger Woods was just one track mind, golf, thanks to his dad. And he just kind of talks about like the 10,000 hour rule and how that can kind of be a misnomer for people. Like, I have to specialize right now. And then the last one is probably Start With Why by Simon Sinek, which I just is really, really helpful for being trying to make a clear vision of like what is your why, what is the purpose of this, why are you doing this, things like that. Seminars, right? Okay. I just did TPI's level one. I found that super fascinating, and I kind of like that it wasn't baseball related, so I can kind of like try to piece together things that I took from that and try to relate it back to baseball. And also I'm terrible at golf, so it's like, maybe this will help my golf. But we'll see. The jury's out on that one. And then I mentioned Zach Dakin's Baseball Performance Summit, which is a fantastic resource that I use this off season. And last one, podcasts. I really like specific people and I try to follow them like when they get on different podcasts. But the one, my go-to is Pacey Performance Podcast. He does a really good job and has a great, great English accent. And it's just a really good, good resource for different topics related to sports performance and sports science and things like that.
Yeah, right on. All really good stuff. The Baseball Performance Summit was really good. And especially like you mentioned, Dr. John Wagle's presentation, like that in itself was good enough for me for like the cost of what it was. And I reached out to him actually to set up a podcast. So we're going to try to set something up this spring to get that together. And awesome. And it's literally on that. Like I listened to it and I reached out and I was like, hey, heard you on Zach's thing. Like I have to have you on the PBS CCS podcast to talk about this, please. Like, can we set something up? So that one might be in the works for you. So keep an eye out.
I'll definitely keep an eye out for that one.
All right. I want to hit you with a lightning round and then I'll get you out of here. Four questions, long or short of answers as you want. And then we'll ride. Cool with it.
Let's do it.
Okay. First one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I couldn't narrow it down to one. If we were just like me personally, like it'd be Rob Fumagalli, because he gave me a job twice, which is fantastic. I'll take one job and he was offered me a job twice. So that's been great. But I guess three that I would say, who are kind of like figureheads, Derek Hansen, he's a really fantastic speed guy. Zach Dakin, he does a fantastic job with like program design and talking about his mistakes that he's made in the past and like his philosophy with high low and how he tries to mimic that in his programming throughout the year. And then one guy here, Wenham Flat, who's the rugby strength coach on Twitter. He started the Strength Coach Network. I'm not a part of that, but I will definitely be using my continuing ed money this year and probably buying a monthly subscription to that service. But he's fantastic as well. Does a really good job kind of breaking down different aspects of coaching and making things kind of humorous on Twitter, which I thoroughly enjoy. Those are the three.
Zach is the best strength coach I've ever been around. Like his programming is unbelievable. His understanding is unbelievable. And like his ability to relate with athletes and like get them to do things is next level. Like literally the best coach I've ever been around. So, and when I interned at TCU, it was like, he was popular, but not to the extent now. Right. Where I was like, oh, it's only a matter of time before this guy blows up because he's just next level. Like other people need to know who this guy is. And now he's like all over. So it's really cool to see, but yeah, he's elite.
Yeah. One of our coaches who we had in 2019, he's actually at the University of Washington now, much to my dismay, but he interned with Zach as well. And he had the same glowing review. Like he's super smart and the Joe Murray up in UW is doing great things. So he's carrying on the TCU intern tradition.
Right on. One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Me personally, I'm a barbell guy. Like I just love back squats. I love everything that the barbell has to offer. But if I were to say like just for an athlete, like you got to go like adjustable dumbbell or something like that. Just because as easy as possible, get as much bang for your buck with an adjustable dumbbell as you can.
It's super funny. We're hiring new people on board. And like one of the questions we ask is like, you got a TRX, some bands and some power blocks. What do you do? Cause like, that's very common to the pro strength coach. So like, we all know all the adjustable dumbbell, I can do an absurd amount of things. And he kind of looked at us and I was like, if you haven't heard of power blocks, they're adjustable dumbbells. Like, okay. That changes my answer a lot. And I was like, you got to get very familiar with that because you're going to be using those all the time on the road.
What am I going to do with DC blocks? Those aren't helpful at all.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Man, I'd have to say successfully defending my thesis in grad school is probably my biggest professional accomplishment, followed by the SCOTY. And then personally, I guess I have to go with beating my brother and dad's marathon time back in like 2015 or 2014. It's just a great thing that I love to bring up whenever I see them. So give them a hard time.
This isn't on my list. How many marathons have you run?
I've run two. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I wasn't successful at beating their time the first one. So I was like, screw that. We're running it back. Like, and I beat them the second time. So
where did you run them?
One was in Seattle and then the other one was in Portland.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know the like difficulty, obviously being in Boston. I know that the Boston Marathon is enormous and definitely challenging. Like anytime you drive through the city, there's hundreds, if not thousands of people just out running everywhere. Kudos to them. But yeah, I was just, I was curious if you had reached that level of like,
it's like, you always like kind of have that in the back. You're like, all right, what do I got to do to qualify for Boston? If you ever ran a marathon, you're like, and then you look at the time for like 19 to 29 year olds or whatever the age group is. You're like, that's not going to happen. Sorry about it. I'll just keep running. And then maybe like when I'm 40, I can maybe qualify.
Right. The master's division or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Yeah, I love teaching. I was a TA in undergrad. I was a TA in grad school. So I'd probably have to say, like, I'm probably not smart enough to go get a PhD and be like a professor at a college, but I would love to teach at a college as like an adjunct or something like that. Like, that's something that is kind of always in the back of my mind. Like, I come from a family of teachers and stuff. So it's like, it's a good time. I enjoy trying to get the light bulb to come on for people who are trying to learn something that's challenging, you know?
Exercise science or something different?
I mean, probably exercise science. I just find it so fascinating, but like, I don't have enough biochemistry. I don't have enough any of that stuff to like really be a prolific PhD or prolific doctor or anything. So
I wanted to be a math teacher growing up. Very confusing for most people, but I was like, I just love numbers. Like I love math. And like you said, the big thing was like the light bulb moment is like when it clicks, it's like, oh shit, I know math now. Like that's like math is that subject that everybody always struggles with. And then some people it clicks and some doesn't. So like being able to make that click for young people, I think would have been cool, but this is a pretty good profession too.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain about this. This is pretty good.
Brandon, I appreciate your time and for spending, you know, a good portion of the evening with me here. If listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Social media a good place, or is there a better spot to get a?
No, social media is fine. My IG, like I have a personal one that I don't really post on all that much. And then my coach one is just Coach Michelson, MICKELSON. And then Twitter, like I'm on Twitter, but no one wants to watch me complain about WSU football and Seahawk football. So don't give me a follow on there. You can probably just DM me and I'll respond. So no need to follow me on that.
Well, I appreciate your time, and it was good to get to know you, and we'll definitely be in touch soon.
Yeah, you too, Chris.
All right, everybody, that concludes our episode with Brennan. I hope you enjoyed this one. I thought there was a lot of really good information in this one, especially the parts on being adequate versus outstanding and the talk on conditioning that we had. Three things that I took from Brennan in this episode: always have a plan, but be prepared to adjust. On-field metrics are more important than weight room metrics, and be proficient in a lot of different areas, then find your specialty. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.